Advaitic Sadhana is the title of the book which was written by S.S. Cohen and published by Motilal Varanasi Das in 1975. S.S. Cohen spent his formative years, the 1930s and 40s, at the feet of Sri Ramana Maharishi in Sri Ramanasramam, and he also resided in the ashrama during the last years of his life. His body was interred within the ashrama premises in 1980, and he is ceremoniously remembered each year on his Samadhi Day, 27th of May. Since Sri Ramanasramam already publishes four of his books, Guru Ramana, 40 Verses, Reflection on Talks, and Srimad Bhagavata, it was desired to contact the publishers of Advaitic Sadhana to also make this instructive work available to seekers for whom it was especially written. S.S. Cohen wrote the first 8 chapters of this book while residing in Sri Ramanasramam during the 1940s. He watched as numerous seekers, particularly the foreigners, arrived at Sri Ramanasramam without the spiritual foundation necessary to gain the greatest benefit from the divine presence of the Master. In 8 short chapters, Cohen summarizes the essential principles that should be cultivated by the seeker desirous of realizing the truth. The second and third sections of Advaitic Sadhana provide translations and short commentaries on 2 illuminating spiritual texts, the Mandukya Upanishad and Atma Bodha of Adi Shankara. Sri Ramanasramam is currently in the process of preparing Advaitic Sadhana for publication. The first and second chapters follow. Qualified Disciple. This is the age of shortcuts. Time has shrunk and space more so, and the dual inconvenience has affected men's moods and temper. Even the supreme knowledge has nowadays to be given in massive doses and has to produce quick results too, or they will have none of it. In olden days, Brahmajnana, the knowledge of the Absolute, used to be imparted by the rishis, self-realized sages, to their sannyasi, world-renouncer disciples, only over a number of years, staying with the Guru in seclusion, often in the forest, for the whole of the period was a prerequisite for many good reasons, which the disciples could not question. Now, we cannot do that. Time presses, and our patience has, likewise, suffered contraction. So has our appreciation of the quest and the prize at issue. Besides, the culture which most of us have inherited is too extroverted and too aggressively intellectual to permit us to understand within a short time what it all means to be a sadhaka, a practical aspirant for a truth of which in our homes and colleges we were given an inkling. We are apt, moreover, to bring with us scraps of knowledge gleaned from a wide reading of the miracle-ridden theology and occultism, including an endeavor to accommodate the Vedanta inside them. The result is that we return from the Guru, the qualified teacher, and his ashram with our doubts still in our heads, uncleared, and our minds about truth and untruth still befogged. It is necessary at the outset to understand that it is not possible to hone out avidya, the primeval ignorance arising out of the sense perceptions, with a half-hearted approach, with scanty faith, with a mind weighed down by preconceptions, stubborn worldliness, fixed ideas, and inordinate haste. These do not qualify for the supreme knowledge, jnana, which exacts a steady, unwavering, wholehearted discipline. Authentic seekers are humble and most modest in their expectations, and do not, as a rule, lay down conditions in advance of the yogic practice, nor fix time as to the possible attainment of the goal, but surrender themselves unreservedly to the sadhana, spiritual discipline, and to the guidance of the teacher, unmindful of the results. The seeker of the Absolute must have no object in life, but the persistent pursuit of the Absolute, to which he bends all the power of his soul. To approach it in any other attitude, say with motives not strictly spiritual, or with a surfeited, insubordinate intellect, or to expect the Absolute to bend and yield its secrets in the first week or first month for one's own sake, for the sake of one's worldly achievements, illustrious ancestry, or community, denotes a lack of the most elementary qualities that make one eligible for it. Eliticism has no place in this path. Its application is poor, its understanding diffused. So are its spiritual yearnings. It would be absurd that this approach attacks the object, that is the world appearance, from two fronts. The one by investigation, which helps distinguish the sentient, changeless seer from the insentient, ever-changing seen, the body, and the other by dhyana, meditation, which suppresses the seen and reveals the seer. With the former, we dialectically expose the fallacy and worthlessness of the sense data, and thus demolish the foundations over which we have been accustomed to raise the false structure of our knowledge, and with the other, we dive deep into the substratum to find the subject as he is in himself, the owner of the senses, who is the Absolute Reality. Shankara gives a picturesque description of the aspirant who qualifies for this knowledge and his approach to the self-realized teacher in ancient times. We shall now explain the method by which liberation is attained for the benefit of those who aspire for it and who desire to know this method with full faith. This means to liberation, namely knowledge, should be explained again and again until it is firmly grasped. To a pure Brahmana, seeker of Brahman, the Absolute, disciple who is indifferent to everything that is transitory, who has given up the desire for a son, for wealth, and for this world and the next, who has taken to a life of sannyasa, renunciation, and asceticism, and has control over his mind and senses, who possesses compassion and all the qualities of a disciple enjoined by the scriptures, and who has approached the teacher in the prescribed manner and has been examined in respect of his profession, conduct, learning, and parentage. Upadesa Sahasri. Necessity of Sadhana, Chapter 2. The unsteady of mind has no knowledge of the Supreme, nor has he meditation. To the unmeditating, there is no peace, and to the unpeaceful, how can there be happiness? Bhagavad Gita, Chapter 2, Verse 66. These lines are a philosophy of life in a nutshell. They guide him who desires to live in peace with the world and with himself, as well as him who is bent upon taking the pilgrim's staff in search of the truth absolute and the freedom for which his soul yearns. They tell the former that peace is unattainable without mental steadiness, and the latter that mind control through meditation is absolutely essential to attain that knowledge which alone can give release. The mind, which is the only instrument of knowledge man possesses, is usually never at rest and too entangled in the object of desire it pursues and in the duties, responsibilities, and attachments which these impose upon it. To know how to release itself from them the help of the master becomes necessary to show the way out of the sense mess and into the aloneness of the being, Kaivalya, of the pure-minded self, which is all purity and tranquility. This is the supreme knowledge to which the following lines refer. I know this mighty being who shines effulgent like the sun beyond darkness. One triumphs over death only by knowing him. There is indeed no other way to liberation. Shvetashvatara Upanishad, Chapter 3, Verse 8. To triumph over death, discipline of the mind, sadhana, is therefore necessary, as in deep sleep the subject enjoys the massive bliss of Kaivalya when he sees no sights, hears no sounds, and is completely free from thoughts. So must the yogi, in the waking state, withdraw into the Kaivalya of himself through meditation to attain the knowledge of the being or self, which is the supreme liberation. This method is called Jnana Marga, the path of knowledge, or Jnana Yoga, the yoga of knowledge. In no system is the practice made so easy and safe as in this yoga, because first, it is dialectical, and secondly, it is free from the dangers which often result from misdirected practices which interfere with the natural functions of the body or with supersensible forces lying beyond the control of the subject himself. Jnana Yoga, also called Advaitic Sadhana, non-dualistic discipline, is the direct path to liberation. The process can be summed up in only three words: empty your mind. In dreamless sleep, the mind is totally empty of thoughts, plunged as it is in the bliss of its own native state, the pure consciousness, chit. But waking is the state of thinking, which rejects the worlds of time and space and covers the being, like the dust that covers a clean mirror. In order, therefore, to perceive this effulgent being, thoughts have to be arrested. The mirror of the mind has to be cleared of its dust. This is called Turiya, the fourth state, to distinguish it from the other three states of waking, dreaming, and deep sleep, which experiences the blissful aloneness of Supti, deep sleep, in the full view of the waking, Jagrat, when the senses and the faculty of cognition are present but rendered inactive by practice. Its other name is Samadhi, the ecstasy of self-cognition. Its other name is Samadhi, the ecstasy of self-cognition. It goes without saying that the first attempts to arrest the onrush of thoughts appear frustrating, sometimes even painful, but success is sure to result from persistent efforts. Constant practice releases the mind from its inhibitions, its habits, memories, fear, suppressed longing, anxiety, etc., and establishes a free flow of the dhyanic current. At the same time, every day, if regularity in the practice is scrupulously maintained, those who find it difficult to restrain the mind from the very start take to japa, repetition of a mantra or holy name, which is soothing and awe-inspiring, preparatory to meditation. The reduction of thoughts to a substantial degree is indispensable for entering the state of samadhi, and as this cannot be achieved without mind control, all other methods have eventually to pass into dhyana, meditation. When the mind will be able to stand like the jet of a lamp that is protected from a breeze, Patanjali, the japa will by then have ceased to be repeated orally, but will have turned into the silent ajapa, the serene quietude in the heart, which is the end and aim of dhyana. Other means of subduing the thinking faculty, such as drugs breath control to obtain the cataleptic state of Laya, interference with the uvula and the frenum, lingui, etc. do not concern us here. Genuine sadhakas, practicing yogis, avoid shortcuts which may land them in dangerous situations. Dhyana and vichara, meditation and investigation, if done steadily, will not fail to take them safely to the glorious self. It is not by stupefying or over-exciting the cerebral cells, nor by circumventing the century-old discipline, but by purifying and controlling the mind that the vision of reality can be ensured. Continued in the September-October issue.